crossing the forest track at a pace that forced Jamie almost into a jogging gait. "I agree with Father DiNardo," Lee said as they walked through the woods. The trees were blazing with autumn. Red and gold and auburn leaves littered the ground like a many-hued carpet that crackled and rustled as they hiked along. "About not mentioning the cliff dwelling," Jamie said.
"Yes. Why stir up more controversy than necessary? Your goal is to be on second expedition, not to argue the chances of intelligent Martians."
"If they existed, they must have died out long ago," Jamie said, puffing slightly as he worked to keep pace with Lee. The Navajo part of his mind thought, if they existed, they might have migrated to a richer, bluer world. Lee raised one long-fingered hand in a gesture indicating silence.
"Be patient. You will be on Mars for a year and a half. There will be ample time to visit the site again, if you can find it."
"Blindfolded," Jamie snapped. The Chinese looked down on the intent, bronze-faced younger man and smiled slightly.
"Patience is a virtue," he said.
"You'll recommend me for the expedition?" Jamie asked.
"You have little idea of what you ask. There will be only 8 berths for this expedition, only 2 geologists."
"I know. Anybody would commit murder to get included," said Jamie.
"Worse than that, you have already been to Mars. The younger scientists are clamoring that it would not be fair to allow someone who has already been there to return."
"Fair? This isn't a game."
"I agree. But by convincing the selection committee to reject anyone who has already gone to Mars, they make it more likely for one of themselves to be picked."
"Christ," Jamie grumbled. "It always boils down to politics."
"Always," said Lee.
They walked through the falling leaves in silence for a while. The afternoon sun was warm, but Jamie felt a chill inside him. At last Lee said,
"I will support your inclusion in the expedition, but not as a geologist."
Jamie blinked up at him, puzzled.
"Trying to take one of the geology berths would stir up too much animosity," Lee explained.
"Then what?"
"Mission director, of course," said Lee. "As mission director, your experience with the first expedition would be an asset, not a liability."
All that Jamie could think to say was, "Oh." Lee smiled again like a Cheshire cat.
"After all, you really were de facto mission director the first time, no?"
Jamie was not a politician, but he knew enough to keep his mouth shut. There was no way to answer that loaded question without putting his foot in his mouth. Lee felt delighted. It would be a delicious irony to place Waterman in the same position he himself had struggled with during the first expedition. "Let this red man know the stress of responsibility just as I did. Let him feel the strains of younger men making demands on his judgment and patience just as he made demands on mine." "This is not worthy of you," Lee chided himself silently. "This is not the way an enlightened man should behave." Yet he nodded inwardly, satisfied that the cosmic wheel was going to complete a full turn. There was one more person Jamie had to see before his post of mission director could be confirmed. Darrell C. Trumbull. Jamie shivered involuntarily as he was ushered into Trumbull's spacious office on the top floor of the tallest tower in Boston's financial district. The room was cold, almost painfully so. It wasn't only that the air conditioning was set to a frosty temperature. The entire decor of the office was wintry. Bare walls of pallid gray, not a painting or a photograph or even a flower to brighten up the bleakness. Nothing but sweeping windows in one corner, looking out on the city of Boston far below. Trumbull was lean and hard-eyed as he sat behind an airport-sized desk of hand-polished ebony. He was completely bald, making him look almost like a death's head shining in the glow of a tiny spotlight set into the high ceiling. He was in shirt sleeves, with a precisely knotted maroon tie at his throat. A gray vest was buttoned up tight over the silk shirt. He looked as hard and sharp-edged as flint. Jamie wondered if this was what Dex would be like in 30 years.
"Have a seat. Relax," he said, indicating one of the big burgundy leather chairs in front of the desk.
As he sat down, Jamie remembered how his grandfather would sit in silence for several minutes when meeting someone new to him, take the man's measure, size up his persona.
But Trumbull was not a patient man.
"So you want to be mission director," he said.
Jamie nodded. The truth was, Jamie wanted to go back to Mars, and he would accept any position, any job, just to be included.
"That's a lot of responsibility," Trumbull said.
"Dr. Lee recommended me for the position," Jamie said slowly. "He was mission director for the first expedition."
"I know, I know."
Trumbull tilted back in his massive desk chair and steepled his long manicured fingers. He waited for Jamie to say something. When he didn't, Trumbull said,
"This is going to be a very different kind of trip, Dr. Waterman. Very different. We're not going just for the sake of sweet science, no sir. We're going to make money out of Mars."
"I hope so," said Jamie. Trumbull went silent for a moment, his hard gray eyes studying Jamie.
"You're not against turning an honest dollar, are you?"
"Not if it helps us to explore Mars."
"That it will, that it will.
Then I'm for it."
"Hasn't been easy raising the funding for this trip. I've had to work like hell."
Jamie realized the man was waiting for a compliment.
"You've done a fine job," he said.
Trumbull drummed his fingers on the desktop for a moment.
"My son's going to be one of the scientists, you know."
"Yes, I've met him. He's a geophysicist."
"Right. But he's got a good business head."
"Do you have a good business head, Dr. Waterman?"
Jamie was taken aback by the question.
"I don't really know," he answered honestly.
Trumbull looked displeased, almost angry, but he said,
"Doesn't matter. Dex will look out for the business end of this job. Don't you worry."
Jamie thought the man was really talking to himself.
"Well, I suppose you've got the best qualifications for the job," Trumbull said grudgingly.
"I'll take good care of your son," he said. Trumbull looked genuinely surprised.
"Take good care? Ha! Dex'll take care of himself, by damn. He'd better. You just make sure that everything goes right. That's your job."
Jamie thought, "No one can guarantee that everything will go right. Not when we're 100 million kilometers away." But he said nothing. He got up from his chair when Trumbull rose from his, reached across the massive desk, and shook Trumbull's cold, dry hand. And left Boston with his appointment as mission director assured. Greenhouse Garden, Sol 6. Trudy Hall was saying,
"The important thing, of course, is to avoid contamination."
"Yes," Mitsuo Fuchida agreed. "We don't want to accidentally introduce Earth microbes on Mars."
Jamie nodded. He was walking with the two biologists between long trays of barely leafed plants. The greenhouse garden was finally set up in its own dome, connected to their habitat dome by a double-hatched airlock. The two domes were exactly the same size, even though much of the garden's floor space was not yet used. Room to grow, Jamie told himself, for the people who follow us. The atmosphere in the garden was just the same Earth normal as that in the main dome, but kept at a slightly higher pressure, so that air from outside its dome would not leak into the garden.
"Then there's back contamination to consider as well," Hall said, her brows knitting slightly. "We can't have Martian organisms infecting us."
"Or our food supply," Fuchida added.
The greenhouse garden served two purposes. The long rows of hydroponic plants were intended to supply the expedition's food. Soybeans, potatoes, leafy vegetables, green beans, onions, peas, eggplant, melon, and strawberries. All fed by nutrient-rich wastewater that the plants themselves recycled with the aid of specially cultivated scavenging bacteria. Fuchida intended to raise wheat eventually, using high-intensity, full-spectrum lamps instead of natural sunlight.
"It looks good," Jamie replied.
"It is good," replied Hall, very seriously.
Fuchida looked equally proud of the garden. Hall went on.
"We're thinking, Mitsuo and I, of increasing the carbon dioxide partial pressure in this dome."
"To accelerate the growth of the plants," Fuchida said.
Looking across the rows of seedlings, Jamie asked, "Will that mean that we can't breathe in here?"
"You won't need a spacesuit, just an oxygen mask," Hall said.
"But we don't have masks." Fuchida allowed a tiny smile to crack his serious facade.